Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hi, I'm Scott Hahn, and I'd like to invite you personally to join me and Breadbox Media on August 24th in New Oxford, Pennsylvania, for a day of spiritual renewal. I'll be presenting three talks, one on St. Joseph, one on the sacrament of matrimony, and another one on the Holy Eucharist. Learn more and register at breadboxmedia.com/PA conference. I hope to see you there.
Celebrate our God-given freedom and faith while honoring our Blessed Mother with Ghirelli's USA Rosary. Each state is represented on this rosary's 50 beads. Red, white, and blue enamel adorn its patriotic crucifix. Get yours today. Shop www.ghirelli.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, Catholic book blogger. Today with us, we have Alan Migliorato, who has been married since 1993 and has three daughters. He's owned a sign and advertising company based in the Orlando area for the past 20 years. He has a certification in youth ministry from the University of Dayton and is the founder of Adventure Catholic Leadership Formation Training. Alan achieved the rank of Eagle Scout and is a veteran of the U.S. Army. Today, we'll be speaking with him about his book, The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thanks so much for having me, Pete. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. So, as a father of four daughters, I found this book very compelling. The first thing I'd like to ask is, what was the driving force behind writing this book?
That's a good question. So driving force for me behind writing this book starts in Proverbs, where we're told that as iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens another. I think that as men, we need another man around us to kind of say, hey, get your life back on track. You can't live two lives. You can't walk a path with one foot in a different, going in a different direction. You need men in your life that are like that. We also need men there that are there for our daughters, because in my opinion, that's probably one of the biggest downfalls of our world right now, is that there are no men being manly men for their families. They're letting their daughters be raised without them in the house. It doesn't necessarily always mean that they're not in the house present. It just means that they're not present emotionally, spiritually, for their kids, for their daughters, for their wife. But men in general tend to, think of themselves a little bit selfishly. And it's, unfortunately, if they don't have a boy, sometimes it's like, well, we'll just slide that aside because, it's a girl and, her mom will take care of it. That's not the way that men are supposed to be.
Right. So in the intro of the book, I really liked where you said, and this kind of dovetails off that, there's no time like the present to start being the type of real man your daughter can be proud of. What words of encouragement can you give men that they can indeed make the changes necessary to become that?
Well, a word of encouragement would be, you only got so much time in your life. And so trying not to make it sound like a scare tactic, but, if you've done something with your family or to your family or, neglected them in any way, it's really take a big gulp of pride, swallow your pride and make that change, because you've got one opportunity that you're being given right now by God to be a good shepherd for your family. And if you're not taking advantage of that chance, of that opportunity, you're missing out on what the Holy Spirit's guiding you to do. And that's a shame, because God's got you as a father for a reason, and that reason is not to neglect your family.
Mm. And not to make excuses for us men, but society's really flipped manhood on its head. We've gone from our actions being chivalrous to now everything's perceived as toxic. How in the world did we get here?
Well, I think people like to label things, or that chauvinistic. And too many times we get caught up in fighting what the definition is about rather than saying, label it how you want to, but I'm telling you these things because I care about you and I love you. So if I'm holding the door open for you, it was out of respect. If you want to take it that, you know, I'm a chauvinistic pig by doing that, you can take it however you want to, because I know what I meant to do. And I think Jesus did the same thing, where Jesus never backpedaled. He said, no, this is my flesh and my blood. You need to eat this and drink of it if you want to get into heaven. And he lost a lot of followers because of that. But he never said, okay, well, it's not really my flesh and blood. He never said that. He said, no, this is my flesh and my blood. And as people would walk away, he would say to his apostles, am I going to lose you too? Are you going to walk away too? Is this teaching too tough for you? Mm. It doesn't matter. We don't have to have people agree with us when we're doing the right thing. And so if you're doing the right thing, and if you're not being a chauvinistic jerk, then you don't have to worry about it. Let people believe what they want to. My wife stays at home, right? So I work and my wife stays at home. And I have an acquaintance of mine who I've known for many years. His wife thinks that I'm chauvinistic because my wife stays at home. But she hasn't taken the time to ask me why my wife stays home. It's my wife's choice, because we raise a family that way. And that's what we've decided is best, is to have my wife at home with my family, with the kids, and I go to work. And then as much time as possible, I spend with both of them, my wife and my kids. I'm not out, you know, going to bars and cheating on my wife, and I'm not doing these things that men think they have to do to be manly. I'm there with my family. There's nothing manlier than raising your family and being the man God calls you to be.
For sure. You note this interesting paradox, and I'd like to speak to it, and that is society changed its idea on how men are expected to behave. Has it changed its idea, or have we men just become complacent?
What do you think?
I think it's both.
Yeah, I think it's very easy. I agree with you. I think it's a bit, you know, a little bit of salt and a little bit of pepper in there. I think what happens is that, you know, we buy into these ideas that, you know, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't be so, you know, I shouldn't do this, or I shouldn't force my family to go to church, or maybe I don't want them to not like me. And so maybe I'll stop, you know, demanding that we go to church or demanding that we have dinner together, you know, every night. I know that things get busy and life gets in the way, and you can make all the kinds of excuses. The bottom line is, our job as men, as fathers, is to put God first and to shepherd our family toward God. That means get in the car on Sunday morning. Well, I'm tired. Great. You can sleep after church. But we're going to talk. We're going to go to church. We're going to have lunch together. We're going to talk about the readings we just heard. And then if you want to go to sleep, great. Well, I'll take a nap. And then we wake up, we'll spend some more time together. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you have to be glued at the hip to your family either. I know that everybody needs some, you know, some quiet time, some solace, some alone time. That's fine. But you don't need all time being alone. And unfortunately, that happens. I'm in a business networking group for my business in Orlando. And we're talking about Father's Day coming up, and, you know, talking about, so what are you guys doing for Father's Day? You going out to dinner with your families? Nah, man. Nah, I had enough of my family. I'm playing golf. I'm going to get drunk. You know, I'm going for a weekend with my buddies. It's Father's Day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Father's Day. Like, man up. What are you doing, brother? You know, and nobody will say that because they feel judged. But I'm not judging people. I'm judging their actions. Right. So if by me saying, hey, you know, I'm judging your actions, you know, this is not the best thing that you could be doing right now, it doesn't mean that I don't think that you're up for the challenge of being a better man. I mean, right now, you're not making good decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, I think, is a key factor in society today, because we're all – it's like everybody's afraid to give that suggestion or give that support, because automatically everybody falls back and plays a you're judging me card.
Exactly. And that's what I was talking about earlier, Pete, is that, you know, well, you're judging me. Well, I'm not really judging. Well, okay. I mean, if you want to say that I'm judging you, that's fine. But let me tell you what I was really doing. And then if you still think I'm judging you, that's something you're going to have to live with. You think I'm judgmental. I am. But it's not of you. I don't get to judge whether you go to heaven or not. And thank God, because I wouldn't want that decision. And you probably wouldn't want me to have that decision. But I do get to judge whether your actions are great. And let me say this, too. Everybody does this. Whether or not they're going to admit to it is a different story. But if you meet somebody who says, I never judge anybody or their actions, the first question I always like to ask is, well, how many friends do you have that are drug dealers? How many friends do you have that are on, you know, death row in prison for murder? Well, none. Well, why not? Because you don't surround yourself with people like that. But you don't surround yourself with people like that because you've judged those actions to be not good actions.
Right.
And so don't worry about it. You know, I always like to say if it's the truth is not nice. The truth is kind. So kindness has truth with it. Niceness has a lie with it. So if you want me to pretend that, you know, that I'm not being judgmental of your actions, then I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm going to tell you, yes, it's exactly what I'm doing. I'm judging that action is bad. I'm judging that using cocaine is bad. So I'm not going to do that. That's my judgment. Mm-hmm. So is it my job to help my brother realize, you know, and my figurative brother, that he also shouldn't be doing those things? Absolutely. We need to sharpen one another.
Right, right, right. You know, another thing that's brought up in your book and that I think is troubling today is that I think we need to once more define the roles of men and women. God created us, as you point out in the book, as spiritual equals, but he gave us each very different roles. Can you tell us those roles in light of church teaching?
Oh, sure. And, you know, this is one of those areas where the youth group I work in, I'll give you an example. This is one of those areas where we talk about, you know, gender specifics where it can really start a war. And you just got to know what you're talking about and be ready to have this discussion before you bring it up. And it doesn't mean that I have the answer to everything when we're going to, you know, during our talk, I'm not going to have the answer to everything. I guarantee you I won't. But it doesn't mean that I'm not going to go look for it and learn about it and find it. So when we're created as man and women physically, right?
Right.
We're also created with masculine souls and feminine souls because we are all things visible and invisible, just as our creed describes. If we believe in that and we say we believe in that, that means that we have a masculine soul and a feminine soul. There are qualities. I'm not saying that our spirit is male or female. I'm saying that we have masculine and feminine qualities to our soul, because our physical being is a reflection of who we are spiritually. And when that's out of whack, when we lose that, when someone says, well, I feel like a girl. Okay, well, let's slow down for a minute. What exactly do you mean by that? I like to ask a lot of questions, you know. Well, somebody says, well, I feel like, you know, I was meant to be a girl. Okay, what is it that you feel? Well, because I don't really like, you know, violent sports, and, you know, I really don't like, you know, football, and I'm really not a big drinker. Okay, so that's what you think it is to be a man, is to like violent sports and football and drinking enough beer?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're misguided on what being a man is all about. You know, and so when we look at what society tells us that a man and a woman are, of course people are going to get confused. I personally don't really care to watch a whole lot of football. Does that make me not a man? I mean, no, I'm going to answer that for you. You don't have to answer that one. But no, it doesn't make me any less of a man because I'm not going to sit down and drink beer and watch football on Sunday. It doesn't. It doesn't make you any less of a man if you do. As long as you're spending time with your family, that is your vocation that God has given you. And so a lot of times this can come across as like finger waving, you know, where it's like, I'm waving my finger at you because I'm better than you. And that's not what it's meant to be. It's meant to be, brother, I love you and I care about you. And I'm going to tell you something that nobody else is going to tell you because I need you to hear it. Mm-hmm. And it worries me because your soul is at risk right now.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to discuss more of the manly art of raising a daughter. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media.
Marriage is ordered between one man and one woman because, like God's love, it is called to be fruitful, open to life. Well, there's a lot of confusion in the culture today, but here is some clarity in the following beautiful quote from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, 2335. Each of the two sexes is an image of the power and tenderness of God, with equal dignity, though in a different way. The union of man and woman in marriage is a way of imitating in the flesh the Creator's generosity and fecundity. End quote. Listen, be not afraid. Couples that are willing to live openness to life in their marriage will receive not only many spiritual benefits, but a very practical strengthening of their marriage. I'm Jim Littleton, forming faithfulfamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf. Today we have with us Alan Migliorato, and we're talking about his book, The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter. And Alan, I'd like to spend the rest of our time today looking at some key aspects from a few of the chapters. We obviously will not have enough time to cover them all. But your first action step that you introduce is for us to introduce our daughters to God. And guys, there's more to that than here's the Bible, have fun. This is all about witness, isn't it?
It really is. You know, if you do happen to pick up my book, The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter, and you read every chapter and memorize it and do everything right except chapter one, where it says introduce your daughter to God, you might as well not buy the book. Because if you're not introducing your daughter to God and keeping God first, and I put that chapter first for a reason, because this has got to happen in this order. You've got to keep God first. If you're not keeping God first in your lives, and that means not, hey, daughter, it's time for you to go to church and I'll be here when you get back, that means I'm coming to church, you're coming with me, we're going together. That means that when you hit a roadblock in your life and you're struggling with something, you don't put God on the shelf on Sunday and say, okay, I'm done with you till 7 days from now. That means you keep God involved in every aspect of your life, of your daughter's life. It's an important thing. I have a quick story for you with that if we have time.
Absolutely, go ahead.
My middle daughter played basketball for a public school, a high school, and she went to Catholic school for 8 years, as did my oldest and my youngest. I thought it was time for them to go to a public high school, you know, kind of get about a little bit more with reality, with, you know, how people are going to be treating you in the world. And so you're not shocked when you graduate from high school that not everybody's Catholic. I thought it would be a good thing for them to be, you know, exposed to the public high school scene. Whether or not that was the best thing for me to do is still for us to, you know, to determine. But I think I did the best with what I could. So she was a captain of a basketball team. And long story short, when first game came around, she goes, okay, she goes, I'd like everybody to get together so we can pray. And a couple of the girls were like, well, we can't pray. We're not allowed to do that. And, you know, instantly my daughter says, well, you don't have to pray with me, but I'm going to be praying. And I'd like you to join if you want to, you're welcome to join. So right behind the seats where they sit on, you know, her and a couple girls held hands and prayed. And then a couple games later, next game, there's a couple more girls added to that circle. And next game, there's a couple more girls added to that circle, you know, and soon everybody was added to that circle. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a good apple can actually enrich the bunch of apples, just like a bad apple can spoil the bunch. Mm-hmm. That team ended up not being the best team for her to be with, because those girls, you know, didn't understand all the things. Like, my daughter would keep the Lord's Day holy. So if they had a practice and then a game, sometimes if it was on Sunday, she wouldn't be able to make one or the other because we'd had church, or, you know, there's only one time for us to go to church and we're on a travel basketball team. So we might have to miss a game or miss a practice. And the girls, you know, eventually were like, well, you know, you don't put in the team first. And my daughter said, well, absolutely, I'm not putting the team first. I put God first. Mm-hmm. And the team is something that, you know, is part of me. But they, you know, that ended up being just a very emotionally destructive team to be on. But it didn't stop my daughter from putting God first.
Right.
And that's what's important, is not that you just, you know, do as I say, not as I do. It's important that we teach and lead by example.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that segues nicely into my next question, and that's about keeping Sundays holy. And I gotta admit, I struggle with that because we're so connected now that it can be difficult to turn it off. So what are some tips you can give us to make Sundays a non-business day?
Well, the first thing is you just gotta do it. I mean, you know, it's easy to talk about, you know, doing things that are hard for us. It's easy to say, yeah, I'm going to lose some weight, or yeah, I'm going to start working out more. But I mean, you still have to do it. Mm-hmm. You know? And so the bottom line is just do it. I mean, to sound like Nancy Reagan here, but just do it. You know, you got to get out there and do it. I started my business in Orlando 20 years ago. And I talk about this in the book, but I was working 7 days a week, and, you know, it was extremely taxing. You know, you're working 7 days a week. You don't have time for anything, especially your family, because, you know, as a young business owner and a young father, I thought, I'm not going to fail at this. I'm going to provide for my family. I'm going to make sure that they have food, shelter, and clothing. I'm going to make sure that they have everything that they want and need. I'm not going to let them down. And so I'm going to do whatever I can. That means working on Sunday, then so be it. And my family can go to church on their own. Well, my family came to see me one Sunday. They used to come and see me at work so that they'd at least get a little bit of time to see me during the day. And as they were leaving, you ever hear somebody say something to you that just kind of weighs really heavy with you, but they didn't mean it to be that way?
Mm-hmm.
So my daughter, as she was leaving, said to my wife, "Why doesn't Dad go to church with us?" And she was probably four years old. And, you know, it was just one of those things that I kept hearing echoing in my mind. And my wife's response to her, this is as they were walking away from me. I don't even know how I heard her say this. But my wife's response to her was, "Well, you know, Daddy's busy. He's got a lot of work to do. Let's not bother him. You know, we're going to go to church. Let's get in the car." And when I got home that night, I told my wife, I said, "You know, it broke my heart to hear her say that." She goes, "Oh, she's just four. You know, she doesn't understand." She goes, "She'll understand when she gets older." And that bothered me even more. It's like, what exactly is she going to understand when she gets older? You know? So the next morning, Monday morning, I had a meeting really early, and I left. And when my daughter woke up, I was gone. And so this is what turned my life around, honestly. This is what made me stop working on Sunday. When my daughter got up, she asked my wife, she said, "Where's Dad?" And my wife said to my daughter, she goes, "Oh, he's gone." Well, my daughter didn't take it as I was gone and I'll be back later. She took it as I was gone. And because I wasn't there very often, it was natural for her to expect me to be gone. It just hurt her that I was actually going to be gone and not coming back, is the way she took it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she started crying, and my wife called me laughing about it. She's like, "Oh, Angela's crying." She's like, "She doesn't think you're coming back when I said you were gone." And I said, "You're kidding." I came home that night. I said, I'm done. I'm not working on Sundays anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not. I'm just not going to do it. The funniest thing happened, though, Pete, was when I stopped working on Sunday, I did lose some clients. But in the big picture, I probably doubled what I was making. I probably at least doubled what I was making by not working on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, within the next 2 months, I stopped working on Saturday as well. I only work Monday through Friday now from 8:30 to 6. Anything that happens on that after hours, it can wait till the next day, you know, but I don't even make my employees work on the weekends, you know, and I have a young employee working for me. He's always like, "Hey, you know, I'll work on weekends if you want." And it's like, nope, you're going to take time off. You're going to go, you know, go spend time with your family, go to church, take time on the weekends to recharge, you know, spend that time with your family. You can't get that time back.
Right.
I can always make more money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can always make more money, but you're not going to get the time back. And the hardest thing to do is say, "Oh, that's easy for that guy. He owns his own business." Well, I'll tell you, my daughter, who is now my oldest one, who's now 22. Well, she'll be 22 Wednesday. She has been with a job where, you know, she told them, "I'm not going to work on Sundays. I can't work Sundays." And they refused to promote her. They would refuse to, you know, to grant any other time off if she needed time off.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up leaving that job. But, you know, the thing is, I feel that was a very successful thing, because now she's in a job where she doesn't work Sundays and she's making more money. She's much happier. So, like, God does everything for a reason, but we have to keep God first. And if we expect our kids to do that someday, it's up to us to do it right now.
Absolutely. You know, this next one, I think, is so important nowadays, because as the saying goes, you don't know someone until you know someone. We need to know who the people our daughters are hanging out with. So how can we have that influence over their circle of friends without coming off as stifling them?
Well, it really is a sweet science to that, isn't it? I mean, you don't want to say, "Oh my gosh, who is that girl that you brought home with, you know, she's got, you know, black makeup and all over the place and fishnet stockings and she's dressed like, you know, a punk rocker." You don't want to be judgmental, because that girl might be a very nice girl. She just may be looking for attention. So I always tell my kids, you know, surround yourself with champions. Surround yourself with people that you you know, that you can actually look up to. And the way that I get that across to them is I always tell them turkeys, you know, flock with turkeys and eagles fly with eagles. So you have to decide what you're going to be. You're going to be a turkey or you're going to be an eagle, you know, and they laugh. They're always like, oh my gosh, Dad, you have a saying for everything. Shut up. You know? And it's like, well, you, as long as you remember it, you know, you make fun of me all you want, but remember these things because those are the things that sink in, you know? And I remember my daughter having a friend years ago where this girl was always in trouble. I mean, she was always in trouble. It was at school, she was in trouble. If it was her parents, she was in trouble. And she'd come spend the night at our house and, you know, and she would talk to me, you know, just kind of open up to me about things going on. Cause I asked, say, hey, what's going on in your life? Well, where do I start? I'm like, well, start from the beginning. Cause that's where we usually start, you know, and just try to keep it light. And, you know, she'd say, well, my parents are mad at me. And this girl would tell me, you know, because, I snuck out and I walked around the block with my boyfriend at night. And all we were doing is walking around the block. And I can't believe they're mad at me because I was walking around the block with my boyfriend. And I'm like, well, let me ask you something. Do you think they were mad at you because you were walking around the block or because you snuck out and you were doing that? Well, I guess because I snuck out. But it doesn't matter because they'll always mad at me no matter what I do. So as I would talk to this girl, my daughter would see me talking to this girl, right? And my daughter eventually came to me and she goes, you know, she's always a victim of something. You know, she goes, I'm kind of noticing that she's always a victim. And she goes, I just really don't want to spend that much time with her anymore. You know, I just don't want to hang out with her. And I said, well, you told her why, you know, that, you know, cause this girl keeps calling you to go do stuff or texting you. And you're not even answering sometimes. I said, you need to tell her why. She goes, well, I don't want to hurt her feelings, you know? And there's another lesson there where it's like, are you speaking the truth? Does it need to be said? You know, it needs to be said. So this girl maybe changed her ways. And I remember her telling her, you know, this is why I'm not hanging out with you, because you always have, you know, something is always someone else's fault. You never take ownership of something. And, you know, I can't be around that kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And of course they were not friends for a little while. And then the girl kind of came back and was like, you know, I realized what you were saying was true. And I'm really taking a look at myself and, you know, ended up changing her life.
For sure. We're going to take another quick break. When we'll be back, we'll cover a few more topics that are included in The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter. We'll be right back.
Are you married? I'd like to suggest that you often return to the fond and true memory of your spouse when you first met and on your wedding day. Well, he or she is still that same lovable person. Perhaps life has presented many challenges you did not expect back then, but you have come through these together. And the providential fire of your tribulations and your love has forged you into the one body you are today. And that is a beautiful thing. Never let anyone or any inferior thing tear you and your spouse asunder. God is one with you. He is love. Your marriage is love. And love endures whatever comes. It does not come to an end. See 1 Corinthians 13. I'm Jim Littleton of FormingFaithfulFamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger. Today we've been spending it with Alan Migliorato and talking about his book, The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter. And Alan, the next one I'm sure is going to spaz some peace activists out who are listening, but you raise a valid point when you say we need to teach our daughters how to fight. What do you mean by that?
Well, yeah. I mean exactly that. I know that it's probably not going to go over well with a lot of people, but I'm not saying to go look for a fight. You know, growing up, my dad was a professional boxer. And one of the things that I did with him growing up was I would spend a lot of time in the gym because both of my parents worked. And so my dad would take me to the gym with him while he trained. So I was in the gym 5 or 6 days a week for 7 or 8 hours a day. I mean, I grew up around the boxing ring. And so I knew from a really young age exactly how to fight, exactly how to defend myself. And that lesson, whether or not my father intended it to be that way, that lesson transferred over into me having a lot of confidence with everything that I do. Even if I'm wrong, I'm confident that I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But I taught my daughters how to fight, and I told them what my father told me, and this is really important. I'm going to say it. He said, never start a fight, but never walk away from one. Mm-hmm. And let me say that one more time. Never start a fight, but never walk away from one. And what he meant by that, and the way that I've translated that into to my lives of my daughters is stand up for what you believe in, right? Which is having prudence, which is a cardinal virtue, mm-hmm. and also have the fortitude to defend yourself, which is another cardinal virtue. So both of these things are fighting. We're standing up for our beliefs. We're fighting for what we believe in. If my daughters are completely pro-life, so in any situation, like they're saying, listen, this is our belief. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. It's pro-life. Like, we are for the life of that child. They're standing up for it. And then they have to defend their stance, because then you have the what ifs. What if this situation happens, or what if this happened? Yes, I believe that the child is to be saved. So, like, I've taught them to fight for your beliefs. I've also taught them to physically protect themselves and the hope that they would never have to do that. But that also translates into having confidence, into knowing how to move out of the way of danger. So, yeah, I think that your kids, your daughters especially, need to know how to fight.
Another one that, Alan, I think that you include in here that's totally lost in society is teaching her modesty. As we record this story, it just broke a few days ago that a priest has recently been coming under fire for asking a female parishioner to cover her shoulders during Mass. And, you know, I recently, and this is true as the day is long, read a story where a woman had a very low-cut dress, and while receiving communion, the host fell, you could probably guess where. Why has this suddenly become an acceptable way to dress during Mass, and what can we do to stop the next generation from doing the same thing?
Oh, boy. Let's see. Where do I even begin on this? So I can start with the story, and I'll get to your question, I promise. But when I was taking my daughter to buy clothes for her high school, because as I told you before, she went to Catholic school for 8 years, and there's pretty standard uniform for Catholic school. So as she moved into high school, she had to buy some clothes. And so we went shopping, and this story is in the book, The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter. It's in there, but this is me telling it from my perspective as well.
Okay.
We went shopping, and she said, I'm going to go to this store. I'm going to try, I want to get a couple outfits. And I said, okay. So she came to me. I was, walking around with her. I'm looking at some of the outfits with her. And she goes, I want to try this one on. I said, well, where's the rest of it? Like, what is that? And she's like, that's a skirt. And I'm like, are you sure that's not a headband? It looks like a headband to me. And she's like, oh, Dad. She goes, that's just the way that kids are going to dress in high school. I said, okay. I go, well, think about this for a minute. I go, what are the people going to think about you? What does that say about you dressing that way? And so I thought that would be a good, a good way to end that conversation and kind of get my point across. But of course I was wrong, as I usually am. I told my daughter says to me, she goes, well, Dad, you always told us that it doesn't matter what people think about you as long as you know who you are on the inside. And I have taught them that. And I've taught them to be themselves no matter what. So I said, okay. So I said, that's all that matters. I said, I think what you're trying to do is take what I've told you out of context, right? And so she says, no. She goes, you told us not to worry about it. And I go, okay, well, I'll be right back. And she goes, well, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to go see if they have this in a larger size so I can try it on too. And she says, you're kidding. And I said, no, I'm going to go try this on too. She goes, Dad, you're going to look like a pervert. I said, well, what does it matter what other people think about me? I know who I am on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And she goes, okay, all right. You're not really going to try that on, are you? I said, well, if you insist that you want that outfit, I'm absolutely going to buy one for myself too. And she goes, all right, let's go. I get the point. We'll go to another store. We'll look for something else, And I said, well, and we sat outside the store. I remember sitting there with her and she kind of looked frustrated. And I said, well, tell me why you're frustrated. She goes, because I don't want to, I don't want to always have to watch. I go, I feel like I'm always having to watch everything that I'm wearing, And I said, of course you are. I said, you've got, it doesn't matter what people think about you to an extent. I go, but that's not you. You're not that kind of girl. You're not the kind of girl that's going to wear these kind of clothes. I said, you wouldn't wear a bikini to church, would you? She said, well, no, I wouldn't. I go, well, why? It doesn't matter. You wear one in the pool. You wear a bathing suit in the pool, but you wouldn't wear it to church. She goes, well, it wouldn't be appropriate. And so I think that that development of that conscience, you know, that self-reflection has to start by being present. And if a father's not present in his daughter's life, she's going to use everything that she can to attract the attention of another man. Mm-hmm. And usually men are going to give that attention, and it's not going to be in the best way. It's usually going to be in a very exploitive type of way where they're in that for themselves. They're looking to get something out of that relationship, or if they can call it a relationship, and then they're going to move on to the next one. Mm-hmm. And so I told my daughters this from a very young age. And so even though there's times where they want to test your boundaries, those are the times where you need to stand resolute as a man and as a father. And it's absolutely important that your wife is on board with you with this. Mm-hmm. If you're telling your kids, listen, you're not to dress like this, and then you buy your wife something that's completely revealing and inappropriate, what do you expect your kids to do? Well, that's the kind of woman that dad's attracted to. So, you know, maybe I'll dress like that and I'll attract a guy like my dad someday too. Mm-hmm. So you can't lead that double life. You have to lead by example.
Yeah, for sure. Later in the book, you present a list of warning signs to look for when preparing your daughter for a boyfriend. As often happens, you know, girls let their hearts lead them rather than their head. So going back to this theme we've been talking about, how can we gently tell our daughter she's picked a dud?
Well, I always kind of wait until I'm asked what I think, you know, or I'll ask questions that kind of make them realize, you know. I'll give you an example with that too. My oldest daughter had a boyfriend for a while who was controlling in sort of a passive way, very passive aggressively controlling. And like, she had girlfriends come over to our house to have like a little campfire in the backyard, and told him, you know, I'm having some friends over tonight, so I'll see you tomorrow. He'd still come over, you know, and even if he just watched TV with me and my wife. But I thought that was like really strange, you know. It was like, give her some time, you know, like, but I would always say to her, you know, so doesn't he have any friends that he hangs out with? Well, I'm not sure, you know, I mean, he just really likes to spend time with me. I'm like, oh, that's nice. I said, so you don't get tired of him, you know? So I'm not like telling her that's weird. You know, I'm not saying things like that, but the difference is if she asks me, and which she actually did one time, she goes, do you think he's a little controlling? I said, oh, absolutely. Well, why didn't you tell me before? I said, well, you didn't ask me. I said, but I'm not letting you get into danger. I'm letting you figure these things out on your own. I'm not saying, you know, yeah, I knew that guy was going to hit you, so yeah, I let you figure it out on your own. I'm saying, hey, these are things you need to notice. I mean, he's got a quick temper. You know, he never hit her, by the way, because I wouldn't be here. I would be in jail somewhere. But, you know, those are things that these girls have to figure out on their own with our help. So we have to guide them. Look, do you think that's the best thing that he could have done, is to come over and spend time with me while you were, you know, out back with your girlfriends, and then he goes every 10 minutes to check on you? Doesn't he trust you? That's the way that I would say something like that, is does he not trust you? Mm-hmm. And then she starts thinking, well, maybe he doesn't trust me. And maybe she has that conversation with him, and maybe it comes out that he doesn't trust her. So that realization, you know, that you've picked a dud moment, it can come from you. But as a lot of times girls do, they want to rebel at different times. And if they choose this time to rebel, they have to know that you have their best interest in mind. So yes, if my daughter asked me before, don't you like my boyfriend? I've had to say no at times. I know I don't. Well, why don't you? Well, you don't like anybody. Well, maybe that's true. Maybe it's not true. But I'll tell you why I don't like this one, if you want to know. I don't like him because he's rude. He doesn't make eye contact with me. He's always on his phone when he's here. He's not paying attention to me or you, you know. And I'm not dating him, but I'm saying, like, he's got to pay attention. He's got to be a pleasant person to be around. You know, doesn't say thank you, doesn't say please, doesn't even say anything to me as he walks in the house. So these are reasons I don't like him. Mm. But if that's what you, that's the kind of boy you like, then that's something different.
You alluded to something there that you also cover in the book, and that is social media, using the phone, social media, and its dangers. It's become evident in some stories lately that, you know, there's this cyberbullying going on that's leading teens to suicide and unfortunate events such as that. What steps can we take to avoid having our daughters be hooked on essentially what has become an addiction and should be labeled as such?
Well, first, I think we need to realize what an addiction is. And that means taking a look at our own lives. And I never would have thought that I would be anywhere close to being addicted to social media or even looking at it too much till I did, you know, an average over 10 days or a week of how much I'm using social media. And I have to tell you, 2.5 hours a day on average for 7 days was what I was using. And that wasn't like, you know, I'm going on 2.5 hours straight. That means 20 minutes here, 10 minutes there. I have a lunch break. I'm taking 30 minutes of my lunch hour, you know, on and off looking at social media. But I timed it. Okay, I'm on for 5 minutes here, for 30 minutes there. 2.5 hours a day. In 10 days, I will have wasted an entire day. That's 1/10 of my day. Mm-hmm. Do you want to hear something even scarier, Pete? In 10 years since I've been on social media, 1 year of my life was completely wasted on social media. I mean, do the math. It's scary. It's a scary number. I mean, it really is. And you think, well, I'm just going to go on and just going to post. What are you going to post? What is it that you have to say really loud to everybody right now? Mm-hmm. Oh, I went and I had a great dinner the other night. Okay, put your dinner online. But then you're seeing who else went to dinner, and then you're seeing who else's kids are graduating, and you know what the score was on the game. And like, I mean, people are going to have crooked necks in 5 years because they haven't looked up. So these are things that I warn my kids about, you know, and because kids today connect with one another socially on social media, that's a very difficult thing to do. But when I quit using social media completely, and I'm not on anymore at all, I have it for my business, and I have one of my employees go on and post for me. Mm-hmm. But I've gotten off of everything. And when I told my daughter about how much time I had wasted and what I was doing, she pulled out her phone and started looking at it. And I said, in my mind, I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. I said, just told her how much time I'm wasting. And I told her, I said, I just told you how much time I'm wasting. And instantly you pull out your phone. Are you trying? Why don't you just smack me? And she's laughing. She goes, no. And she goes, I'm getting rid of 3 social media accounts right now. She got rid of 3 of them out of the 5 that she had been using instantly. Because she said, you know, she goes, I don't want to waste time like that. She goes, time's valuable. She goes, that's one thing I've always instilled in them is time is precious. And if you're on there so much that you've pulled away from doing things outside of the house or outside of looking at your phone, if you're disconnected, that's scary. I mean, you've quit, you know, quit teams or quit clubs because you want to be on social media. Mm-hmm. That's scary. Anything that you're overusing like that in your life is scary. Right. And so, you know, that's something that you've got to instill in them from a young age is be cautious. I've done interviews where people have asked me, don't you think that cell phones are the root of all evil and that we should just take them out of kids' hands? No, I don't. I really don't. With as much as I dislike social media and as much as I want, you know, my kids to be off the phone, we have to teach them how to regulate things in their lives. If we're going to be there doing it for them, then we're missing the boat. We're not always going to be able to be there, and they're going to have to pass this information on to their kids someday. And so we have to train them how to train others. Mm-hmm. And so we have to create leaders.
For sure. Well, we spent a good bit of time today together, Alan, and we just scratched the surface. There's a ton of great information in this book. Where can people find your book, The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter?
Okay, you can go to AdventureCatholic.com. That's AdventureCatholic.com. And you can scroll to books or click on books, and then The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter will be the first one there on the top. And please contact me if you have any questions about the book. If you disagree with something, you're welcome to contact me as well. I have a lot of people that read chapters and don't quite get what I'm talking about, and they're welcome to contact me as well. I can clarify anything for you. I do speaking engagements with different men's clubs and parish missions for different churches. So you're more than welcome to contact me if you have information or that you need information. It's AdventureCatholic.com, and the book is The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter.
All right. Well, that's all we have time for today, Alan. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
No, man, I just wanted to thank you for being flexible with me on the interview time Thank you so much for your review of the book and for helping me promote this. I think it'll really help some men connect with their daughters. And I talked to some men that just have a hard time connecting with their daughters. This is a great book to get you on the right track.
I agree. So go get yourself a copy. And with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.